Welcome to the Coaching Your Family Relationships podcast, where we do the foundational work of creating strong family relationships. And that foundation begins with strengthening you. I'm Tina Gosney. I'm your host. I'm a certified life and relationship coach, and I welcome you here. You know, there's a lot of buzz this year about breathing and doing different breathing practices to gain emotional and mental control. And I'm a fan. I got to tell you, I'm a fan. I've done this work for myself. I can tell you that when you manage your breath, when you manage the way that you're breathing, you can also better manage the stressors of life that come at us every single day. And we start to have more balance in our lives. We start to gain that balance on purpose. It doesn't just become an accident. We can actually get it when we want it by utilizing our breath. We can also really manage our emotions in a more healthy way. Managing your breath can give you more energy. It can help you sleep better. And overall, you just feel more in control of your own life. You just feel better. And so I have created a breathing workshop. It's on sale this month. It's usually $49. This month it's $29. You're going to find a link for that in the show notes. If this sounds like something that you need to have in your life, I urge you to go and click on that link and to buy this class for yourself. This is such a gift that you can give yourself this holiday season. This month, December 2023, I won't be recording any new episodes to this podcast, but I will be re-releasing the top five episodes from 2023. This one is number 4. This came in 4th this year, and this was one recorded earlier this year with Leah Davidson. Leah Davidson is a good friend of mine. She's a fellow coach. She uses something that she calls the 4 tendencies, and she told me this about this years ago, and I was fascinated by it. And so she explains some of that in the podcast, how she used, it's like a personality test, right? We all like to find out more about ourselves and take a test and tell me about who I am so we can understand and know ourselves better. But she used this test to help her with her blended family. And she talks about that in the episode. I hope that you, if you decide to take this test, that this will also help you. And even if you don't decide to take the test, that you can gain some wisdom from what Leah has to share in this podcast. So with that, I'll let you get into the conversation that I had with Leah Davidson. Welcome to the podcast, Leah. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here with you.
Would you just briefly introduce yourself to the listeners so they know who you are?
Sure. So my name is Leah Davidson, and I am a life coach, and I help people overcome and manage stress, burnout, and compassion fatigue. I am also a speech pathologist, so that's where the compassion fatigue comes from, because when you're a helping professional, there's sort of a unique hazard of your work that encompasses stress and burnout. I am also a wife and a mom and a stepmom and a mother-in-law, and I'm from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And I love talking about the 4 tendencies, so I'm happy to be here. I always am looking at how can we make things easier? How can we make things easier to communicate, to love, to accept? And the 4 tendencies was something that did it for me. So I'm excited to be here to share with you.
Thank you so much. And I am excited to have this conversation with you today because I know anytime we get together and we talk, we just go for a long time. So we're going to try to strain a little bit and not make this one too long.
That's right.
But tell me, why are you drawn to the 4 tendencies in the first place?
So, you know, just to preface it, the 4 tendencies is based on a book by Gretchen Rubin. So she has written multiple books about happiness, and she spent years studying happiness. You know, when I read the book, I was looking for tools at trying to understand human behavior, like I always do as a life coach. I'm sure you do the same thing. We are a blended family, and I have 3 biological, I have 2 biological sons and 3 stepkids. And as we were growing up, there's a lot of dynamics there. And I was always trying to figure out, oh, what is it? Is it because they're my biological kids? Is it because they're my stepkids? Is it because they're at this home half the time and another home the other half the time? Is it their personalities? And then some of it was I started feeling maybe I'm just a bad mom, maybe I'm just a bad parent, maybe I'm a bad stepmom. So there was a lot of drama in my head. And that drew me to the book because the book explained how people respond differently to different expectations. And that resonated with me because I realized like, oh, it's just not completely random. And it's certainly not just me. And it helped me to learn a little bit more about myself and about my kids and how we could then interact and communicate better.
That's really interesting. And I love that you were drawn to find answers to the things that you were thinking, like maybe I'm just a bad mom. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because they're over at this other house, or maybe because it's like they're my stepkids. I love how you were drawn to find answers and didn't just sit in the, oh, well, that's the reason why. And I can't do anything about it.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. And it wasn't that also, you know, sometimes you can't do something about it. And I wanted to know, do I just accept this? Are there things that I can do to influence? Are there things that I can do to change or to accept? So looking for answers is the way to go. You give the brain something to look for and it goes on a scavenger hunt and it will find it.
Yes. And let me just clarify for a second. When I said, I can't do anything about it, that doesn't mean that I'm going to go then and try to change everybody else.
Right.
So that I'm going to feel better. That's what can I do that I can figure things out and I can find things and answers for myself to understand myself and the people in my life better.
Exactly.
That's the hunt that you went on, right? It wasn't
absolutely. Oh yeah. Well, you know, I think initially as you think that, well, I could find things that's obviously going to change other people. And then for me, it's always like within 30 seconds, I realize, well, that's not going to work. So the only person I can control really is me. And it's all about how I respond. And then I think once you have a couple experiences where you see, oh, it really is all about me, it just becomes my natural place. Whenever something comes up with somebody, whether it be my husband, my kids or clients or even neighbors, I'm always, you know, my instinct is like, what's wrong with them? And then I turn around and I'm like, okay, what can I do? How am I contributing to this issue? How am I contributing this problem? How can I resolve it? How can I get to a better place of peace with myself? How can I have more connection with these people? And that's all about me. That's all that inside job.
I love that. And I think that by the act of doing that, like focusing on yourself, saying, what can I do to change this situation or to change my experience of the situation? We just learn as human beings, we just learn by watching each other. Mm-hmm. And there's no way that doesn't have an effect on the people in your lives. And you're teaching your family members and the people that are in your world, like it is possible to focus on yourself and to change your experience without having to change things outside of you.
Absolutely. And
which is the best news, because that's where you actually have the most ability to affect change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. With that introduction, let's get into the tendencies. Let's just go through them one by one.
Okay. So just, I think for starters, what she went on a hunt for was she was curious, like, why do people do what they do? And why do some people like find it easy to, and she uses the examples of like to keep New Year's resolutions. Why do some people find it easier to commit to an exercise routine? And then she determined it comes down to the simple like question of, how do you respond to expectations? Inner expectations, so the things that you put on yourself, and outer expectations, the things that other people put on you. So she went on this hunt, and she doesn't say that they're hardwired. And that's why I love the word tendency, because a tendency doesn't mean it's set in stone. It just means you sort of like lean one way or lean the other way. And so she came up with four tendencies, and each one has a way that they respond to the outer expectation and the inner expectation. So the first one is she calls the upholder. And as I share some of these, you'll probably be running through your mind saying, okay, is that me? Is that not me? And just to let you know, the book is great. She also has a quiz that you can go online. It's called like the Four Tendencies Quiz. Ask a bunch of questions and it will sort of send out what you are, which tendency you happen to be in.
Right. So I took the quiz.
Yeah.
I listened to all of them. Like I've read it. I've listened to YouTube, you know, explanations with her and other people. I knew automatically which one I was.
Yeah.
But I thought there's also, so I see myself in a little bit of the other ones too, times.
Yeah.
But overall, there's one that I know that I am. And it was just like no question. So I went and took the quiz. I'm like, well, of course that one came up.
Yeah. I like to look at it like one is home base and the other one's like my cottage, my vacation home.
Yeah.
Like I like that one. And she does say you'll tend to lean towards one versus the other. And I, years ago, when all my kids were living at home, I had them all do the quiz. And, you know, it comes out with what their main one was. And each kid, I was like, oh, yeah, oh, that's accurate. And it was a secondary. It was their vacation home that I was always like, I don't know if it rolls this way or this way. And I think that's important to recognize that all of this, nothing is set in stone. As people grow and develop and change, their tendencies can also change. And it doesn't mean that this is putting you in a box and you have to stay in that box, because of course we all will do some of everything. There just happens to be one that we just feel more comfortable in. So, and I was the same way. So the upholder, I'm an upholder. And when I read it.
Me too, which is probably
why we get along so well. So some key things about the upholders. Is there people who readily respond to both the outer and the inner expectations? So that means if you make they make a commitment to you, they're going to uphold it. It's going to happen. But if they also make a commitment to themselves, they're going to follow through on that as well. Now they love rules and they have very clear plans and they're self-motivated and they're disciplined. And if you tell them what to do, they have no problems leading the way. Now, I don't know if you want me with each expectation or each tendency, sorry, there are strengths and there are weaknesses. So it's not just all rosy and shiny, because sometimes you can look and you think, well, it's great being an upholder. You know, they get things done, they're self-directed, they enjoy routine, but there's also some weaknesses. And sort of the weaknesses are they can be super rigid, they can be controlling, they can be defensive, they sometimes don't like it if other people break the rules, they sometimes don't like it if other people don't uphold their expectations, they can be a bit impatient. And so those are just, you know, a little glimmer of what it's like to be an upholder. Again, when I recognized that in myself, I was like, yes, for the strengths. And yes, for the weaknesses.
Yes,
totally. They're all there. And it just allowed me to look at the perspective of, okay, I love being an upholder for many reasons. There's lots of things I'd love to change. But it helped me also recognize other people having to deal with me as an upholder. When I looked at those weaknesses, I was like, huh, it may not always be so fun to have a mom who's like, you know, rigid and defensive, or, you know, kind of controlling, rule oriented. It's got to be hard. So I think it helps to know what you are so that you can start making adaptations and you can start understanding that you're not always like the funnest person to be with based on what your tendency is. So
those are some of the exact same thoughts that I have had about myself as a mother and like, my poor kids had to deal with me being so rigid and so expectation focused and like, why can't you get this done? And what is wrong with you? And like, how has that been for them? That's probably not been the funnest for them to grow up with me.
Exactly.
I do think though, and I come from a background of teaching, a music teacher for like 30 years. And I taught group classes. There are upholders that fit very well into organizations like a classroom, like a religious community, often probably in certain types of business atmospheres, certain types of business that are more rule required and more rule oriented. And they just seem like oh, those are the kids that shine in those types of situations. Mm-hmm. And they just get along really well. They fit. They tend to be teachers' favorite students because they're doing what the teacher wants them to do. Right.
Yeah.
I think that I did notice as a teacher that it's very easy to pinpoint those kids and think, oh, they are just doing so well. This is my favorite student.
Yeah.
But also to see the other kids that were not doing those things and to really look at their strengths and see, like, they might not shine in this area, but they shine in different areas. And just as a teacher, I tried to bring those out, whatever that was in those kids.
Right.
But I don't think that that is normally recognized. Not that I was like some wonderful, insightful teacher. I just tried to be really cognitive of what are the strengths in this child and how do I bring them out? And maybe that one looks different than this one. And this one isn't necessarily better than that one. This one just fits into this type of structure a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I'll share with you a couple of experiences after we've explained the four tendencies, because I think that's exactly what happens is certain people get sort of put on praised for being a certain way, but it's only because of the environment that they're in.
Right. But
I also want to say back to your comment about you not being the funnest mom. I always said to my kids, once we established this, I was like, that's why it's so important to be weighing people's weaknesses and their strengths and loving it all. Because I was like, well, while you don't appreciate that, I bet you don't mind that, you know, if you ask me to do something, I do it. I'm there. I'll respond to you. I don't forget certain things. Like you are enrolled in this and this and that. You know, there are so many benefits too. And that's the beauty. You want to embrace like the wholeness of each tendency because the strength and the weaknesses are kind of what makes it beautiful that you have all those together.
Yes. And we're all human. So we have strengths and weaknesses in everything.
Exactly.
Anything that we're going to find ourselves in.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So the next tendency that we'll talk about is the questioner. And questioners, they question all expectations, but they will meet the expectations, their own expectations, much more easily. And they'll meet other people's expectations if they believe it's justified. So basically, they respond more to their inner expectations. They'll question everything around them and they'll do it if it makes sense to them. So if they want to do it, they're going to do it. So they put a high value on like reason and research and information. They will follow advice if like it works with what they believe. They will follow their own judgment. They ask a ton of questions, which sometimes makes them seem like they're uncooperative or defiant, but they don't like things that are arbitrary. Like they just don't like random things. And sometimes they dislike being questioned themselves. Mm. You know, when you get back to your example of being a student, they're not usually loved in some situations in a classroom. If they're asking questions that the teacher deems are relevant, then that might be great for the other students, but they can sometimes look like they're challenging authority when they're asking, so, well, why do we have to do that? What do we have to do? They're very data-driven. They're willing to like play devil's advocate and they're strong-willed, but the weaknesses are they can end up suffering from like analysis paralysis. They can be pretty impatient if they see that things are being not logical or that other people are being complacent. And sometimes they don't want to accept closure. They want to keep questioning. And they're very focused on things about being fair and whether it makes sense for them. So that is the questioner. Do you have any questioners in your life, Tina?
Oh, yes. I can see that this might, like you said, the analysis paralysis, like that would be a real easy place to get caught and to stay stuck in. Mm-hmm. And I think I've coached some people with that.
Yeah.
But also the questioner, it seems like they are like, they take their own authority over other people's authority.
Yeah.
And that they don't want to be told what to do unless their own authority is saying, yes, this is what you
do. Let's do it. Yeah. And I don't necessarily think that it's to be defiant or rebellious, because if they understand it, and it jives, then they will move forward with it. I have a son who's a questioner, and I asked him permission to share this story. But when he was on his mission, as a questioner in an environment that's very, very structured and rule oriented and so forth, you can imagine it was sometimes difficult. And sometimes his companions would say, like, you're questioning authority, you're questioning things that the mission president is asking us to do. And so I remember, you know, on our calls, he would say, like, they think like I'm disobedient and I'm not following things. And he's like, no, I just like understanding things. I just like understanding the why. So he went to his mission president, and he explained the four tendencies to his mission president. And he just said, I'm just a questioner. And the mission president, wonderful, wonderful man, had just said, oh yeah, I get it. And from that point on, he just knew how to handle my son, that, you know, elder, I need you to do this. And he gave a reason. And he luckily was a humble enough man. I don't know. I have to think of what tendency he was, that he wasn't thinking like, I shouldn't have to explain to this elder why this is this on the mission present. He just said it. And at the end of my son's mission, he sent me a beautiful note, the mission president, and, you know, just talked about my son. At the end, he put a PS and he said, he definitely is a questioner. And isn't it a beautiful thing? And aww. I just love that he had embraced it. And I love that he had learned to see the strengths and the weaknesses, because I think sometimes questioners can get a little bit of a bad rap of just being more difficult. But, you know, in terms of, I used to say to my son when he was on his mission, I mean, the whole church is founded on questions. I don't know if Joseph Smith was a questioner, but he was asking a lot of questions. So yeah. I think it's good to be looking for the strengths in each one.
What a gift your son gave to that mission president, because I'm sure that didn't just carry to him, but all of the missionaries in the mission.
They should have all taken the quiz.
Right. Like, what tendency is this missionary? How do I need to approach him to work with his strengths and the way we have expectations for him?
Exactly.
I think, though, let's go to church. I think that's a really good place to go. There are a lot of people that have questions right now. Mm-hmm. And if you're not a questioner, you maybe have never thought through the questions that people are bringing up. And it could feel very threatening to you to have somebody questioning something and you thinking, why can't you just accept that this is the way it is? Or why can't you just accept the explanation that's already been given? Mm-hmm. Why are you expecting more information here? Yeah. And to be frustrated or to kind of dismiss those people as like, oh, they're just going to be someone that leaves.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's important to recognize, because there's another tendency that we'll talk about in a bit that is also very much a questioner in the sense that they push back on outer expectations, which is the rebel we'll talk to.
I'm just dropping in here just for a minute to see, have you found yourself in either the upholder or the questioner? Have you found what you think you match with yet? Or have you've probably identified, if you haven't found yours yet, you've probably identified someone or several people in your life that fit either the upholder or the questioner, or maybe both. So are you starting to see how valuable this can be to know your tendencies for meeting inner and outer expectations, and how valuable it can be to know your family's members, your spouse, your children, even your friends? How do they meet expectations, inner and outer? It can be really valuable information. There's a link at the show notes where you can go and take this test and find out what tendency you are. And it might not be a bad idea to have some of your family members do the same thing, just like Leah did. I'm going to let you get back to this discussion with Leah, and we'll find out what the last two tendencies are and how they fit in.
And the next category is what we call the obliger. And the obliger, I think Gretchen Rubin says that that makes up the majority of people. There's a large number. I can't remember what the stats are, but there's a large number of obligers. And obligers is sort of the group that readily responds to outer expectations, but they struggle to meet their inner expectations. So within the context of the church, if just by general population, there's more obligers, you know, we can maybe lead it to think there's probably more obligers within the church, which means there may be a lot more people who are more willing to accept things. And we're not talking about blind acceptance. We're talking about a tendency to just lean towards outer expectations. Other people are saying this, I will follow this, I don't have to question this, because obligers have a harder time. They struggle to meet their inner expectations. So there's dynamics like that that I don't think we ever consider within like the environment of the church. People aren't necessarily just being difficult. They just have different ways that their brain functions, different tendencies, and it's not disobedience necessarily. It's not bad to be questioning. This is the way that they learn, and this is the way that they grow.
Yeah, so good. I would say I coach a lot of obligers because they want outside accountability for the goals that they've set. And then when they don't meet them, internally on their own, they're just beating themselves up. Like there's so much judgment inside of themselves for not living up to their own expectations.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that is very crippling inside.
Yeah, exactly. So obligers, they put like a very high value on commitments to others. So you'll see that they'll do anything for other people. So they're probably great ministering people that they, you know, they'll for their family members, for their neighbors, but they do then require things like deadlines and monitoring and other forms of accountability. Sometimes they do have difficulty setting limits on other people's demands. So they can often be seen as, you know, people pleasing. Which people pleasing is not, I know sometimes it gets a bad rap, but people pleasing is not necessarily a bad thing if you're choosing to want to please people versus it being sort of a nervous system response. But obligers, they are reliable and they're responsible and they're great team players and they go along with things. They go the extra mile. They're usually very easy to get along with. So they're great partners for like questioners and upholders and even the rebels, which we'll talk about in a second. They're great partners to have because they're pretty easygoing. Their weaknesses, though, is they can end up being really resentful about what's being asked of them. Of those, they may look at other people. Why are they putting themselves first? Like, I'm not doing that. Why are they doing that? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes they can be very hard on themselves, like you said. Like, they'll beat themselves up. And they have trouble setting limits and saying no, which is often probably why we do end up coaching a lot of obligers, because they want help with boundary setting and limits and saying no, and then learning to have that self-compassion so they don't beat themselves up afterwards. So obligers are, they're a fun group as well.
One thing I thought was really interesting about the obliger is because they have trouble setting their own or just meeting their own inner expectations, they're not really great at self-directed careers or activities like being self-employed. Or like just determining their own structure of a goal or of a work project. They really want to just take somebody else's model and just tell me what to do and I'll be great at fulfilling it.
Right.
I just don't want to come up with what I'm have to do, the process of doing this thing.
Yeah.
And so that's just something to know about managers is that they'll do it. They just don't want to come up with the process for doing it. They want something to be given to them. And I think that I do this. I see myself as an obliger sometimes in certain things that I don't feel like I have a lot of knowledge on. Like when I want to implement an exercise program, I don't want to go to the gym and just decide my own process for doing that. I want to just buy a program, which I actually do. And I work out at home. But I buy a program and I just want to follow along and not think about what do I need to do. Mm-hmm. So I do it with that. I noticed like immediately when I saw They want something that somebody's already created and they just follow it. Yeah, that's exactly me in exercise. Yeah. I just want to follow somebody else's plan.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It can be so much easier to do that. Yeah. And I think that's where if you said like you find yourself an upholder and then you have, you know, your cottage is probably obliger mm-hmm. cottage, whereas some people their, you know, their cottage is going to be questioner. So you'll have those differences and variation, which sometimes it just shows the uniqueness of it all. But yeah, that's definitely it. And then the last one mm-hmm. is the rebel. And these are the people who resist all expectations, outer, inner, and people in this group, they want to be free to choose and express their own individuality. So they put a very high value on freedom, choice, self-expression, and authenticity. And if somebody asks them or tells them to do something, they're likely to resist. They may be sort of, you know, a little bit defiant, it seems like, watch me, I'll show you, I'll do this. If I want to do this, you're not the boss of me. They may have a difficulty meeting challenges, or they will challenge a lot of things. They don't respond well necessarily to supervision or authority or advice or directions or routines or schedules. And this can be a bit of a challenge. I mean, they're very independent minded, so they're able to think outside of the box. They're not easily swayed by other people's conventional opinions, but they're resistant and they struggle, and they sometimes can act like ordinary rules don't apply to them, and they can be a bit restless. And I'll be honest, when I read this one, I was like, oh, this is definitely the hardest personality. This is the hardest tendency, so to speak. And I have an obliger. And in my mind, I had always sort of labeled this child as my quote unquote hard child because when I read, okay, this child is a rebel, and I thought, okay, what are the strengths of a rebel? Because it seems as we're leaving, you know, they're more difficult, they're more, but interestingly enough, these are the movers and the shakers of the world.
I was thinking that same thing. These are the people that go and create new things.
Yes. Yes. And once I saw that light and I put that lens on it, like, oh, my rebel, I can't wait to see what he does on a daily basis. I can't wait to see what he's going to do in the future. It put such a different lens. It removed the whole my quote unquote hard child. Mm-hmm. And just replaced it. Okay, how do I learn to interact? How do I as an upholder learn to interact with a rebel? And how does he as a rebel learn to interact with a mom as an upholder and figuring out that dance?
Seems like they would be opposite, because the upholder is meets inner and outer expectations. Yeah. Rebel doesn't meet inner or outer expectations.
Exactly.
So yeah. Two very different
mm-hmm. very
personalities
different.
Right there.
But I just understanding it helps, right?
Yes, totally. Mm-hmm. I have a daughter who, she's older now, so we can talk about these things, but it was so difficult to raise her. It never got easier. I kept thinking we would reach a certain age and I would think, she has to outgrow this at some point. It's going to get easier. Right. But it felt like every day was a power struggle. She never wanted to follow anything that I said. In fact, I tell this story about her, and she knows like all this stuff. I'm not telling you anything that she's not totally aware of. But I remember so many nights my husband and I would go to bed, and it was just after a long, hard day of dealing with this child. And we would just look at each other and say, what can we do to make things better tomorrow? How can we change things to help her just get along in our family system better? And one of the things that we came up with, and she was pretty young, I think she was maybe 4 or 5 at the time, one of the things that we came up with was she needs to pick out her clothes the night before. She needs to make that decision, because in the morning, it is too difficult for her to make that decision. And there's always a big meltdown over it. So I remember one Saturday night, you know, we need to pick out your dress for church tomorrow. And so I held up two dresses. There's a blue one and a green one. And I said, okay, do you want to wear the blue one or the green one? And she said, she looked at me with just the sweetest look on her face and said, well, which one do you like, Mom? And I said, I remember thinking, I think I'm being set up right now.
That's it. This is a setup. Abort, abort. Yeah.
And so I said, well, I like the green one. And of course, you know what she said. well, I'll take the blue one then. Right?
That's right. Yeah.
Right? The thing was, is that I really wanted her to wear the blue one, but I knew I was being set up. So I said, I want the green one. And I, cause I knew then she would choose the blue. And I did this quite often to her. Mm-hmm. It was just a way of managing things and making it more easy as she was growing up. And then I told her, and she's in her late 20s now. Yeah. And I told her this just a few years ago, like, did you know what I used to do? She got mad at me for, for doing that to her. But as I was researching the rebel, that's one of their characteristics still, is that if they find out they were manipulated at an earlier time in their life, they become upset about it in the present. Even though it's way in the past, they become upset about it in the present, which makes so much sense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's great. That's such a good story. Well, so in some then, like upholders, they just want to know what should be done and they'll do it. And questioners, they just want the justifications. Mm-hmm. Obligers need accountability. And rebels just want the freedom to do something their own way.
Yes.
So those are sort of the four tendencies. And you know, I'll just share with you one of the light bulbs that went off for me is when my kids were younger. I, like I said, I have three stepkids and two sons. And so there are five of them all together. And it was really bothersome that on Saturday mornings when we were all together, because we had different schedules, but it was time to do chores. And I would just say, okay, you know, these chores need to be done. Everybody go do their chores now. I had three kids who just, like, I had a little sign up sheet and they would sign up for the chores and they would just do them, like, just no questions asked. They just did their chores. And I had one son who was the questioner. Why do we have to wash this bathroom again? We just washed it last week. We don't really, and, you know, just the question after the question, it used to just make me want to like blow my gasket, which I'm sure I did. And then I had a rebel child who was just, I'm not doing anything. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize at the time, though, that I had a question and a rebel and three obligers. I just thought I had five kids. What's wrong with these two over here?
Right.
These two who happen to be like questioning and I have to like get into arguments with them. And I had to, and I was really frustrated. And as luck would have it, the two of them were my biological ones. So then the drama was like, oh my gosh, it's me. It's me. What have I done? Like my beautiful three stepkids. And when I read this and when I figured out what each child, their tendency was, it just alleviated everything. And I just started dealing with them all differently. And, you know, my obligers, they each have like different slants. So one's like an obliger rebel, one's more of an obliger upholder. And you can see that tendency come out too. But generally speaking, things like doing chores wasn't a huge deal for them. Then I just knew that with my questioner, I would say, we need to clean the bathroom because blah, 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 blah. And I just give the reason. And he seemed fine with that. And then my rebel, I just let it be, you know, as he got older, or if you want to go outside and play with your friends, or if you want to go out tonight, these chores need to be done. So it's this or that. And I just wouldn't engage in the nagging. I wouldn't engage, don't forget, because I was just like, this is it. And more often than not, he would do it in his own time, his own place, his own way, because he wanted to have whatever it is he wanted later on. So once I had that, and I still do that with all my kids to this day, where I recognize that some of them I can just make a request. And then other ones I don't like to see it as a manipulation. I like to see it as, this is just, I'm trying to understand you and I'm trying to communicate with you in a way that resonates with you, that goes according to your tendency.
Which I think that helps keep things peaceful and more understandable in the present day. Mm-hmm. But think about as parents long-term, we're trying to help our kids become functioning, productive members, you know, great members of society in their own lives, and to have a happy life. And I think that them understanding where their own weaknesses, their own strengths,
right.
You were also feeding, this is how I operate in the world. This is how I lean my tendency. Mm-hmm. And what strengths can I gain from it? What do mm-hmm. I need to be aware of that might not be such a strength? And how do I, what do I want to do with that? How does that affect my relationships with others and myself?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And them understanding, like my son on his mission, you know, it was very valuable for him to understand that he was a questioner. So instead of feeling bad, when, you know, having some challenges maybe with some companions who were probably more obligers and probably wondering, why are you questioning all those things? He just was like, well, I'm a questioner. And, you know, these are the pros and the cons of it. He was able to advocate for it. And it doesn't mean he doesn't have to change some things and work on the weaknesses of that area. But I think it does, it helps them understand like we're all different. There's not one that's better or worse. Or, and I think it also helps like in a school environment, in a work environment. I mean, Gretchen Rubin, she talks about dealing with like students and colleagues and things like that, because I think it does help in all these different environments. If you understand who you are and take the time to understand who other people are, and how we can each interact with them differently, I think we can just have so much more peaceful relationships, be so much more productive, because we're not like fighting against each other. We're working to each other's strengths and acknowledging we all have the weaknesses. So I think that it's very powerful.
Yeah, I love that. I think if there's one thing I coach on the most, it's expectations that people have of the other people in their lives and how they're just disappointed. Mm-hmm. So how do you see this helping, like to understand your tendency, the other people's tendency? I see this helping so much in just that, oh, I have these expectations because I'm an upholder,
right.
But this person over here is a questioner. And so of course they're not doing things the way that I would expect them to do. So I can mm-hmm. release some of that disappointment, frustration, whatever it is that I'm feeling.
Exactly. Yeah.
And just maybe focus on the, instead of the person being the problem, how do we get these things done with both of our tendencies and how do we work together? I don't know. What do you see there?
That's exactly. I see the same thing. I see that it's very beneficial to be able to recognize that sometimes your expectations of other people are driven by who you are. And I think it's especially true for, you know, look at upholder, they have both of them, but look at obligers when they are sort of like, well, how come other people don't meet the outer expectations? And then mm-hmm. the frustrations that questioners might have, well, why are all these people just, you know, blindly going along with everything? And then the rebel, really, it's just how come there's no independence of spirit? Understand that that's a lens that you're putting on everything. So when other people around you aren't meeting your expectations, you do want to take a look at, well, are they not meeting my expectations because they're just different and they're not me? And what can I do to help support them? What can I do to modify myself as well to help them along in achieving whatever it is they're trying to accomplish?
Which just feeds right back into what we were talking about at the very beginning. And what we have control over is ourselves. But also, just to add something onto that, we also should be always looking at ourselves and how am I contributing to the problem?
Yes.
Or is there something that I need to shift here in order to understand this person, in order to get a different result? Like, what do I need to work on myself?
Exactly.
Here? Yeah. And not assume that we're always just, this is the way the world is because this is how I see it. Mm-hmm. And that everyone else needs to change. And there's that I'm totally in the right here. I think that's always going to be a problem position for us.
Yeah. There's this amazing TED talk by Benjamin Zander called The Power of Classical Music or something like that. And he talks mm-hmm. about being a conductor. And the power about being a conductor is a conductor doesn't really, and I say this in quote, but they don't really do anything. Their job is to bring out the music and the instruments. And he shares, it's this great quote that he talks about, and I think he took it from Maya Angelou, that when your children walk in the room and your children see you do, their eyes light up. Mm-hmm. And he said, he likes to ask the question, if their eyes aren't lighting up, who am I being that their eyes aren't lighting up. And I love that question. And I ask it so often to people in coaching when they tell me about a situation that's happening and they tell this is happening and that's happening, you know, like, what is your contribution? What is your role in this? What are you doing? Not that you have control of other people, but there is some influence. Who are you being that perhaps this is coming out? And that is what you can modify. And that is what you can change. And I think that understanding these expectations, who are you being with your expectations that somebody else is going to be experiencing these things as well?
That's beautiful. A beautiful place to end this discussion.
Perfect.
Unless I'm going to ask you just one more question. Is there anything we haven't covered yet that you think you want to add to this discussion today?
I think the only thing to add is I just want to emphasize this is not meant to, you know, peg people or cage people or completely set in stone. Mm-hmm. This is just another way to learn how to understand each other and learn how to connect with each other. But we do all of these things, all of us, just because you are a questioner doesn't mean at times you aren't an obliger. It just means that there's a greater tendency. So I like to emphasize that because I don't think we can't put people in boxes and just assume like, well, this is how they always are. This just helps us gain one more perspective and so many other perspectives that we can have.
Thank you for saying that, because I do think there's so much danger in just pegging someone in a box and keeping them there. And even if it's only in your own mind,
right,
there's some danger there. We need to allow ourselves to be dynamic and human beings.
Yeah. And to grow. And yeah, exactly. I always say to people when they say things like, especially if they, you know, are in the gospel, then they say something like, well, this is just who I am. And I'm like, the whole point of the atonement is so that we won't be saying that. Right. The whole point of the atonement is so that we can be, this is just who I am. And I am going to become this with the help of my Savior. And right. I think it's the same way with, even though we have these tendencies, you know, this is just a part of who we are. But the whole blessing of having the atonement in our life is our ability to make those changes.
Perfect. Love it. Love it, Leah. This has been so fun to talk to you about this. And I think this is going to be so helpful for people as they look at their own family members, look at themselves and figure out the whole expectation. Oh, it's huge.
Yeah.
Just feel full of expectations in our family. So helpful in dealing with those. A special thank you again to Leah for recording this episode with me. I loved recording this and I loved having this conversation with her. As a reminder, just to go grab your access to the breathing workshop for only $29 this month. Next time, we'll be airing the third most popular episode this year. Look forward to seeing you then. Until then, have a great day.